straighter, and I hone in on his confident demeanor that hoists his body like he's ready to go. For a run, a fight, a competition, mind-blowing sex, anything. It's not manufactured resolve or tenacity. It's palpable. 24/7. I lower my chair legs and shift forward. Shit. I'm ensnared without a fucking trap even being set. So let's rewind, he says. Say that you hypothetically finished your year internship and started your residency. Where would you have wanted to end up? Surgery or emergency medicine? I fiddle with the salt shaker again. But I didn't have a choice. His brows knot. What do you mean? I frown. You really don't know? By his sheer confusion, I realize that he never figured it out. I edge forward, arms on the table. Maximov, I was going to become your concierge doctor.
12. Maximov Hale. I stiffen, my face padlocked of emotion, except for my sharpened cheekbones. My first thought, avoiding Pharaoh was always going to be unavoidable. In every alternate universe, I'm stuck with him. My second thought makes me cringe. What? Pharaoh asks, his fingers absentmindedly nudging his silver rings. He notices how I'm eyeing his hands. His know-it-all smile fucking kills me, and I swear he's 1 second from saying, "Do you like that?" And I think, too damn much. I'm not sharing the intimate details of my second thought. How his father checked up on me when I was 11 and I had a rash on my dick from chlorine irritation. Imagine if that Dr. Keene had actually been Pharaoh. Cringe with me. I gesture to him. I had a mild stroke at the thought of you being my doctor. I feign surprise. If only you were my doctor, you could actually save me right now. My mouth falls. What an idea. You wouldn't be talking if you had a stroke. I wear my irritation, and he laughs on cue, loving to pop whatever humor I cast into the world. It shouldn't turn me on, but most people just placate me. Pharaoh does the opposite. When his laughter fades, he stares at me with a peeking smile. I bite into an ice cube, my stomach tossing in a weird way, almost excited. What? I ask now. You want me to save you? His brows rise with his barbells. I'd rather die, I say instinctively. Maximov. He stretches closer to me, over the table, and his voice drops to the deep, rough octave that strokes my cock. As your bodyguard, I can't let that happen. My gaze latches intensely onto his, and his brown eyes plaster onto my green. So strongly that I'm drop-dead positive we're forcing ourselves not to look lower. Not to our lips. Not to our bodies. Not to any forbidden place that had caused disaster. I try to master restraint, but my eyes say what my mouth can't. Kiss me. He reads them. I know he reads them, and our chests collapse and rise in heavy unison. Jesus Christ. I can't. We can't. But I think, fucking kiss me. Just do it. Pharaoh moves his hand to put his earpiece back in, and then he sits his ass down. They're coming inside, behind you. I turn my stiff neck, and sure enough, Janie walks through the entrance with Quinn out in front, headed towards the table. She wears a pastel purple tulle skirt and a striped top that put her on Celebrity Crush's worst dressed list this morning. She didn't care. I blink once, and they've already reached us. Jane collapses on the chair beside me, and I wrap my arm around the back of hers. I push beyond whatever the hell just happened with Pharaoh. I have no other choice but to move forward. Janie very subtly glances between Pharaoh and me, but thankfully says nothing about any lingering tension.
Dis-moi qui le en tout café,
she whispers, hands in prayer formation. Please tell me they have coffee.
Je ne sais pas.
I don't know. Quinn takes a seat beside Pharaoh and says, another reminder that I really need to read that French textbook Akara gave me. Jane's eyes glimmer with curiosity and she places her chin on her fist, elbow to the table.
And how is that going?
Bien. Good. Quinn shrugs. It'd be easier if you two just switched to Portuguese. I'd tell Quinn that we don't know Portuguese like him, but I'm super glued to the fact that he's actually learning French.
I look at Pharaoh.
Did Akara give you a French textbook too?
No, because he knew it'd go straight into the dumpster.
I'm glad we found the location of your apathy,
I tell him.
Pharaoh laughs. He tosses a fry in the basket and then eyes me, mostly. My neck is on fire, and I keep rubbing my jaw. Quinn scans the table for food. His stomach audibly grumbles. I slide the basket of fries away from Pharaoh into Quinn. Pharaoh makes a face at me, like I just passed his cell phone off to a stranger. Do you not know what sharing looks like? I ask. Pharaoh slides the fries back between me and him.
Quinn needs to learn how to order his own food.
Quinn doesn't let Pharaoh bother him.
Where's the waitress? He asks.
Yes, please, coffee, coffee,
Jane says.
One sugar, dollop of cream, and strapped to an IV.
You have to order at the bar, I tell her.
Merde.
Her head slumps on my shoulder. She's exhausted from today's putt-putt debacle. I'll go for you. Just as I'm about to stand, Quinn and Pharaoh motion for me to stay seated.
I can go alone,
Quinn tells Pharaoh while I sit back down.
She's my client.
Akara would want you to stay with her,
Pharaoh says. Quinn considers this for half a second, and then we all look over at the 6-foot bearded bartender who approaches. He stops and towers over the table, nearer Janie than to me. He fingers his gnarled beard and appraises the length of her body, hovering on her chest. I'm on edge. Anyone who appraises us like we're cattle, I don't trust. From experience, they'd rather hurt my family than make cute small talk. Likewise, Quinn's guard seems to rise tenfold. He angles his body towards Jane, sitting straighter, more menacing, like a boxer about to face off an opponent. If I didn't know, it'd be hard to tell that he's new to the team.
Hi,
Jane starts, but the bartender cuts her off with,
You're Jane Coble.
Yes.
Janie's voice is stiffer than usual.
You wouldn't happen to have coffee.
Your mom is hotter.
I glower. What the fuck did you just say? I see blood red, and I'm already halfway out of my seat. Our bodyguards are right behind me. Where Pharaoh has an at-ease demeanor, as if this is just another normal day, Quinn's eyes widen and darken, horrified, pissed. He probably hasn't gotten used to hearing the vitriol people sling at Janie. I wish it was something you didn't have to get used to. The bartender doesn't balk.
I said Rose Calloway is a hotter piece of ass than that chubby bitch.
I charge forward, venom in the back of my throat, but chairs clatter, more than just me shooting up completely from their seats. I instinctively stand in front of Janie. In my peripheral, I notice her hand gripping her watermelon purse, where pepper spray and a pink switchblade lie. I may have cut off Jane, but Pharaoh cuts off my path, his hand on my chest. He says something to me that I don't hear. I stare past him, hawk-eyed on the bartender who watches Jane's reaction. Fuck you, I sneer, trying to steal his attention away from Jane. The bartender laughs at me and then says to her,
You can't cry if it's the truth.
Jane isn't crying. She sighs into an angry growl and tries to ignore him.
I ask for coffee and instead receive an unsolicited opinion on my looks. Disastrously unequal and a complete nightmare. Muffy.
Fear spikes her voice, grabbing my wrist when I try to step towards the bartender. Pharaoh and Quinn break our hands as they shift around us. The bartender opens his mouth to speak again, and I hear the beginnings of the word slut, and Quinn growls,
Fuck off.
Pharaoh raises a hand to him, and I hear him hiss,
Cool down. Just focus on getting her out of here.
Quinn's nose flares and he nods. Quickly, Quinn begins to lead my cousin safely out of the pub. I hear Jane protesting and shouting,
I leave no one behind.
Pharaoh rests a strong hand on my shoulder, trying to steer me towards the exit. With one move, I tear out of his hold. I'm seething from the inside out. My skin is crawling. Our eyes meet for a heated second. Both of us are headstrong, and I'm not moving on his accord. Pharaoh warns beneath his breath,
Don't jump out in front of me.
He rotates, protectively shielding me from the bartender, using his body as a barrier between me and that bastard. Bodyguards are required to de-escalate aggressive situations, calm them, stop them. Not fuel or even win fights. In case you aren't already aware, I make that difficult. I should leave right now. I should forget the bartender's crude gaze and malicious intent. I should. And Janie won't leave until I do. Even if Quinn drags her out, she'll dig her feet into hardwood or pavement and claw herself towards me. I want her somewhere safe, far away from here. So I open my wallet and toss money on the table. Unable to leave without paying, even if I'm paying a fucking douchebag.
And you're Maximoff Hale,
the bartender says. Don't engage, my parents always tell me. Ignore the hecklers, they say. They're trying to incite you, they remind me. They want to fight you. No shit. I can handle overwhelmed, overzealous fans. I can handle competitive paparazzi. I can handle the tears and the autographs and the selfies. I can even handle tonight, the fucked up part of fame. The sick hatred, chipping bit by bit at our humanity. You want to know what the few other people in the pub are doing? They're filming, with their cell phones, like I'm the star of a fucked up drama. And the title is This Is My Life. Welcome. Take a seat. I put my wallet in my jeans pocket.
How does it feel? The bartender starts up again. Knowing 1,000+ dicks have been inside your mom. She must have been stretched out when she had you. Bet you just fell out of her vagina.
He laughs right at my face. I have tunnel vision. I see red. I see the bartender. I see how devastated my mom would be if she heard someone say this shit to me. She'd cry herself to sleep. And you know what that does to me? It makes me want to fucking scream and throw my knuckles at a face, and by a face, I mean his fucking face. I charge. Pharaoh restrains me, gripping my fist in his palm and forcing my hand to my side. He walks me backwards.
Look at me, Maximoff.
I'm glaring beyond Pharaoh, at the bartender. His lips are against my ear.
He's not worth your attention.
I've said all those words before. Be the bigger person. Walk away. You're feeding into their bullshit. Violence solves nothing. You're the CEO of a nonprofit. Stop. Stop. Breathe. Leave. I let about 15 feet divide me and the bartender. Backing up. Backing away. All the while he's talking shit.
What about your sister?
He laughs mockingly.
Luna Hale. Another wet slut. Bet she puts out twice as much as your mom. Is she a little sex addict too?
I taste acid on my tongue, but words burn the back of my throat, dying inside of me. And Pharaoh can't provoke the bartender. If these insults eat at him, he can't show me either. I'm in a thundering boat of one, trying to steer myself towards the door. I almost get there. And then he says,
I hope she locks her doors at night.
I go rigid. Motionless and still faced towards him. What did you say? He laughs.
I hope she keeps her doors locked. You know how many men would break through just to taste her?
I lose it. Tearing out of Pharaoh's hold, I take a few lengthy strides and I swing. The instant my knuckles crack the bridge of his nose, Pharaoh cuts off my path and then he thrusts back 3 men who spring up from the bar stools. Blood gushes out of the man's nostrils and he shouts the word. Sue. Go ahead and fucking sue me. I turn around with rage in my eyes, leaving the mess I burst behind. I forget that Pharaoh isn't Declan. My old bodyguard would have stayed to cool down the pub. Instead, Pharaoh sprints and reaches my side. Step for step with me, and I glance at him. His hard gaze holds a raw understanding that says, you're not alone. And as we face forward, his hand falls to my wrist, then my palm. He's holding my hand for a strong but brief moment. No one has ever held my hand like that. He lets go, and we both push through the pub doors, walking side by side towards my Audi parked on the city street. Philly, lit up at night. Paparazzi are here. I glance at my phone that says, I saw you leave. I'm in the car driving home. I'm safe. Text me as soon as you are. Janie. I text quickly. I'm on my way home. While I find my keys in my pocket, 3 cameramen near with their lenses, asking the same question.
Why are your knuckles bloody?
Did you get in a fight, Maximoff?
Pharaoh pushes a camera aside.
Get out of his face.
Sorry, the paparazzi apologizes, pretty sincere. He takes more than a few steps backwards. Silent, I unlock my car, and I climb into the driver's seat. Pharaoh is in the passenger, doors locked, and I drive out onto the highway, like it's just another day of my life. I move forward. I don't look back. Flicking on my blinker, I switch to the left lane, speeding ahead of trailing paparazzi that race after my car. Pharaoh reaches across my body. I stiffen, my eyes flitting from him to the road. He seizes the silver buckle by my shoulder and pulls the strap over my chest, clicking the belt in by my ass.
You're not dying today, Pharaoh reminds me. Let me see your hand.
I grip the wheel with both hands, skin busted on a few of my knuckles.
I thought we'd been through this. You're not my damn doctor, you're not my assistant. Not a caped crusader or a fortune teller or my friendly neighborhood Spider-Man, you're just...
Pharaoh. I swallow a lump in my throat, and then I take a chance and look at him. He wears only the same understanding. So I say, it'd break my mom's heart to hear what he said. You know that?
I know.
Pharaoh was around my mom for 3 years. He knows.
But it'd break her heart more to see her son get jumped by 4 men twice his age.
I watch the road as he says,
you don't want anyone to help you. But you're willing to put your life at risk for... Fuck.
He pops his earpiece out completely and unclips his radio from his waistband. Hunching forward, he tinkers with the comms. By the tick of his jaw muscle, I can tell he bites hard on his teeth.
What's wrong? I ask. My radio just died.
Well, you can't save everyone, I say, which makes him smile. And he tilts his head towards me, pieces of his bleach white hair falling in his eyes.
Still a precious smartass.
I nearly smile too, but both of our phones start incessantly buzzing. Family for me, security team for him. It's going to be a long night of rehashing the same story over and over. We both reach for our phones. I'm ready for it.
13. Pharaoh Keen. For 7 consecutive nights, Maximoff buries his time in charity work. I'd think it's penance for the pub fight, but he's drowning himself in work to avoid his old nightclub routine. Where he finds someone to fuck, he's been delaying that since I became his bodyguard. Except for tonight. Tonight is the first night. I'm at a darkly lit nightclub. Lights blink and flash, music thudding the floor. See, I'm a damn good bodyguard, the best of the best, but I'm teetering between doing my job and being a prick. Maximoff is going to ask me to vet whatever stranger he wants to fuck, and my first instinct is to lie. To tell Maximoff that the stranger is a dipshit, a liar, a psychopath or murderer, whatever I need to say to terminate the subsequent events. All night I've been silently convincing myself not to go that route, not to be a jealous prick. Do your motherfucking job, Pharaoh. It's never been difficult, not like this. Pharaoh, you can sit beside me, Maximoff says. They're not going anywhere. He gestures to the 3 men in black suits that guard the VIP couch, their hands cupped and eyes alert. I made a phone call to Tidal Wave, the 2-story nightclub, before we arrived. I let the managers know Maximoff Hale would be dropping by and he'd need extra security. It's been the easiest part of tonight. Seeing him entertain girls and guys with the sole purpose of getting laid, let's just say I've chewed my gum stale. I focus on the task at hand. Tidal Wave has decent security, but even with the additional manpower, drunk men and women try to snap photos and hop the VIP ropes. All eyes are on Maximoff. That I'm used to. He has an endless sea of people to choose from. Yet he's now hiding out on the leather sofa and listening to the alt-rock band 1 story below. Heavy bass booming, the metal floor thumps beneath my black boots. I stand above Maximoff, and I rest a hand on the couch by his shoulder. Leaning closer to him, I say, "You trust them more than you trust me?" I motion with my head to the club security. "Or does this position just really bother you? Me standing, you sitting?" He blinks slowly into wide, sarcastic eyes. My smile stretches, and I laugh while I chew my stale gum, easing back a little bit. "You should have been a psychologist," he shouts over the music. That way you'd get a certificate or cash or something for psychoanalyzing me other than this. He gives me two middle fingers. I roll my eyes, my smile fucking killing me, and I decide to sit on the armrest next to him because he asked. Soft chatter echoes through my earpiece, but it's not for me. I tune most out and scan the crowds that keenly fixate on Maximoff. Most people point at him from the neon-lit bar. Then I steal a glance at Moffy, our eyes catching. Is this position better for you? I ask. His lips pull upward, and a small smile overtakes his agitation. When I asked you to sit beside me, I meant next to me. He gestures with both hands to the available cushion. Since I'm on the armrest, I'm sitting taller than him, which pisses him off a little bit, but he gets handed things easily. I like making him work a little harder. As the alt-rock song hits a crescendo, I shout, I'm technically still next to you. You love your technicalities. Maximoff tosses his phone from hand to hand, his shoulders taut and eyes as alert as the club's security. I watch other people fawn over him from afar, taking photos, gushing with their friends, making come-hither signals for him to join. I turn to him, wondering if he will. Maximoff stays still, his dyed light brown hair thick and unruly. I chew my gum, trying not to smile that much while I study him. He did an extreme close shave, his jaw smooth like cut, polished marble, and his scent is always chlorine and citrus, like summer. He clicks into his phone, and his brows pinch in firm irritation. I slide down onto the cushion beside him and spot the pink Celebrity Crush logo. Closer, I can speak without shouting. I thought you don't actively check tabloids. That was before I busted my knuckles open and had thousands of people threatening to refund their dollar raffle entries. Now October. The raffle for the Campaway went live this week, and the publicity has been uncontrollable. I doubt a fistfight will seriously hurt the hype. Because it's definitely not the first time he's been caught publicly in one, all to defend his family. Sometimes the fights are even nastier. He gets hit, things get broken, someone ends up sued, either him or the bodyguard. The fact that we evaded all those scenarios makes it a success. The security team critiqued the video footage from the pub, and the only criticism they could scramble together was Quinn's sudden outburst. But I don't blame him. The first time I heard the shit people said about Lily Calloway, to her face, I almost blew it. We're told all the time about the constant harassment these families receive, but until you meet it head-on, it doesn't seem real. Glancing at the phone, I say, "You're trying to see how much damage the fight caused?" He nods and scrolls through Celebrity Crush. I take constant surveillance of his environment and him, splitting my attention between the two. Even if you have several refunds, more people will enter the raffle. I try to steal his gaze. You're overthinking. I always overthink. It keeps me... Color drains out of his face, eyes plastered to his phone. My muscles bind. Maximoff? I lean into him, his shoulder taut and firm. Quickly, I scan the screen. 25 reasons why Maximoff Hale is like Reich Meadows. He slowly scrolls down to the first bullet point, and I see words, Maximoff Hale fights with his fists first and talks later, exactly like Reich. Compare the most recent video of Maximoff losing his cool at a Philly pub with this old video of his uncle Reich Meadows outside a diner. Maximoff plays the video of his uncle and increases the volume, barely audible in the club. Reich must be no older than 25 in the footage. Unshaven, tan from the sun, brooding, tabloids like to call him an aggressive jackass. Reich grabs his helmet off his black Ducati. How's that Calloway pussy Reich Meadows? A preppy-dressed man snickers, jumping up on the curb near Reich. Go fuck yourself, he growls, hardened to stone and white-knuckling his helmet. He cements to that one spot, zeroed in on the man like a predator to prey. The look in Reich's eyes feels the same as the look that was in Moffy's. The man snickers. If you don't tell me how Calloway pussy tastes, then I'll find out myself. Starting with the youngest one, Reich lunges and swings. Maximoff abruptly clicks off his phone. The screen blinks to black. Taking a huge breath, he asks me, did that video remind you of me? He stares me dead in the eye, building defenses against my upcoming response. I want to be transparent with him. No hoarding secrets, no doling out lies. But this truth will hurt him a little. I suck in a breath through my teeth. Pinching my fingers, I say, 75%. Maximov digests this silently, and then he eyes my fingers, obsessed with my hands for some precious reason. Your 75% looks a hell of a lot like 2%. I smile, and as the music booms, I have to raise my voice. Then you're not looking closely enough. Purposefully, he shouts back, gripping his cell phone in a tight fist. I chew my gum, assessing his tense state. Turning my head into his neck, my lips a breath from his ear, I say, lean back with me. What? He stiffens. I raise my brows. He's never relaxed on a couch. I let out a long whistle. The new things I'm showing him. Maximov realizes what I mean. He pockets his phone like he's accepting a bet, and then he slides back until his spine hits the leather. His shoulders unwind somewhat. After a short, silent beat, he says, "Thanks for being honest with me. I mean it." I hear the deep sincerity in his voice. "Anytime, Wolf Scout." Our arms touch unconsciously, and when our heads turn towards one another, our faces are only a couple inches apart. The air seems to crack with that familiar, hard-to-breathe tension that I felt weeks ago when I massaged him. Our gazes grip securely. In my head, I can be his bodyguard and sleep with him. I'm that good, and it's that simple. In his head, I'm not sure what's going on up there. He inhales strongly, his chest rising, and his gaze bores into mine, searching for a sign. Mine caresses his like the stroke of flesh against flesh. I want to slide nearer. I want to wrap my arm across his shoulders and close the 2-inch distance. My muscles tighten as I stay still, pulse pounding. And the next look he wears, I know that look. The look that melts his forest green eyes and softly and forcefully begs, "Kiss me." I breathe, my body doused with kerosene, lit on fire, and just before I make a move, a sound, a clearer, more visible acknowledgement for him, his gaze just drops. Off of me completely, to the ground, then the bar where girls start squealing in glee at the eye contact he gives them. I grit down, pained like someone ripped out a rib. I comb my hands through my hair, and Maximov stands up. I stand not a millisecond after. "Where are you going?" I ask tensely. "I don't know," he mutters, and then shakes his head like he's trying to catch his bearings. "We need to talk," I say, but he can't hear me over the sudden switch in songs, a hardcore rock anthem blasting. He's already leaving the VIP area. I follow, step for step beside him, and a stool instantly opens at the crowded bar. Maximov smiles at a short brunette in a sequined mini-dress. "You can sit," he tells her. "Don't get up for me." I restrain an eye roll. She giggles. He flags down the bartender and orders drinks. For his safety, I have no other choice but to do my job. I stand behind him like an intimidating authority, someone that says don't fuck with him. Since he wants to be approached tonight, I shouldn't be scowling this hard. I'm out of the way, but in the way, unseen but seen. All of those oxymorons are killing me tonight. She gasps and says, "No way," 1,000 times. Moffy leans down, cups his hand by her ear and whispers for a full 2 minutes. Her eyes glow like she hit a jackpot, and she nods repeatedly. I can only imagine that he's telling her he wants to fuck her, in a subtler way but still blunt, up front, sex only. I spit my gum into my wrapper, my jaw aching. I pocket the thing, and then the girl hops off the bar stool and heads for the bathroom. Maximov stays by the bar, and since this is my first time being his bodyguard while he's trying to get ass, I'm somewhat in the dark. It's not like he listed this in his rules. He faces me. "We need to talk." He has 100% padlocked his feelings. I glare, his face so impassive, so inexpressive, you'd think he's channeling Connor Cobalt, his uncle who can will away emotion whenever he likes. I hate it. I step towards him and whisper in the pit of his ears, "Are we discussing your flirting techniques?" I unwrap a new piece of gum while he struggles to hide his feelings. "Let it out, Wolf Scout." He gestures to me. "I assume you're asking for advice." I smile and pop gum in my mouth. "That's funny. I assumed you wanted advice from me." "You should look up the word joke because I don't think you know the definition of funny." I whistle. "You're just on a fucking roll today, aren't you?" He can't answer. A server swoops in with his earlier drink order, club soda for him and a cocktail for the girl. She sets the cocktail on the bar and I grab the club soda off the tray. I pause before I put my lips to the rim. You've never taken a sip of alcohol, I say to Mafi, which means you don't know what it tastes like. He stares at me, blank-faced. Is there a question in there, or are you just Nancy Drewing shit out loud? I'm more of a hearty boy, but nice try. Our eyes lock more heavily. All the while, I put my lips to the glass and sip. Sharp alcohol bites my tongue. It's spiked with vodka. I look for the server. Just let it go, it's not a big deal. When he sees me searching for a server, he adds, Pharaoh, it's fine. He refuses to complain. But he can send back a spiked drink. And if the act makes him feel like an asshole, I'll fucking do it for him. Maximoff tells me, Declan would just drop it. I'm not Declan, I remind him for the 44th time this week. I catch the server's attention. I need a bottled water, sealed. I give her a $50 bill.
Right away.
She darts behind the bar, scoots beside the bartender, and then tosses me a bottled water. When I turn around to Maximoff, he looks stunned. He licks his lips, emotion raising his carriage. Take it, I pass the water. He holds the bottled water like he's never seen Evian before. It's just water. Maximoff is frozen still. You didn't have to do that. He means get him the water. Okay, but I did. It's not the first time he's been like this after I helped him. I step closer. Don't you see, Maximoff? There's a cement wall in front of you, and you've just been told to be satisfied with staring at it. He listens intently. And so you just stand there, not able to see the other side. The wall is paparazzi. The wall is the people who spike his drink. The wall is hecklers and his lack of privacy. Screw it all. What's the alternative? He combats. Me hating my life? No! I shout as chatter escalates around us. It's my job to help you over the wall. Declan may have told you to accept the shit in your life, but I'm gonna give you what you've never been given. Like a bottled water, for one. That's a solution that Declan never thought of. Or maybe he just listened to Maximoff stubbornly, say, just let it go. Maximoff opens his mouth to speak, but the brunette slips up beside him, yanking his attention to the left, and he tells her, Give me one more second. Your drink is on the bar.
Take your time, I'll be waiting.
She bites her bottom lip and slides onto her stool. My pulse is wedged in my esophagus. Maximoff whispers in my ear.
The talk I wanted to have with you. His voice is noticeably tight. I can't have her in my car unless she signs an NDA, so you'll need to take her to the VIP section while I hang around the club security.
This is really happening? I don't blink. Do your motherfucking job, Pharaoh. Shit. I have to stay professional. I have to give him what he wants. And if this is it, I ask him. You don't want to be around for that conversation? He shakes his head. My presence usually pressures them, and I want her to sign the NDA on her own terms. I have no real ability to nod or to even force a smile. My body refuses, but I'm able to lean back from him. A painfully cold acceptance mortars my features like brick on brick. This is about to be hell, a hell that I'm obligated to walk through. And really, it's my fault, for liking him in the first place. In the briefest second, our eyes touch, but I'm the one who bails on the moment this time. My head swerves toward the bar. Okay, I yell back at Mafi. On my way to the girl, I lower my volume on my radio, the soft chatter grating on me all of a sudden. Just when I look up at the brunette, a strong hand grabs my bicep from behind. Pharaoh, wait! His voice is right against my ear. Slowly, I turn to face him, and he breathes like he ran 5 miles to reach me. I tilt my head, still hesitant about the direction this all may go. What do you want, Maximoff? Stopped in place, I bear hard on my teeth. And then I freeze. I watch him suddenly check out my features, my cheeks, my piercings, the freckle on my jaw, and he finally allows his gaze to drop to my lips. Maximoff, I can't do this. A pit wedges in my ribs. Be more specific. I'm going home, he gestures to the exit with his water bottle. I'm leaving right now after I tell her goodbye. He takes a half a second to kindly say goodbye to the girl. Then his focus is on me. Heaviness hoists off my chest, my lips beginning to upturn. A night listening to him fuck someone else averted. And I didn't even have to be a prick. I move to lead him out. I'm walking in front of you. He's already trying to push ahead of my stride, but he stops himself short. and he says, "Walk beside me." I do. We move with equally strong, determined gaits, but we're both sitting on the beginning of something unknown, and we carry our familiar tension like a third companion and a bomb.
14. Maximov Hale. Neither of us breaks the silence while I drive home, compounding and compounding in each untouched second. Every moment weighs down, sunken in eternal slow-mo. Pharaoh reaches for the air vents, languid, sensual. His tattooed fingers slide the vent open. Cold air gushes out. But it does absolutely jack shit to temper the heat brewing against my skin. I lick my lips for the thousandth fucking time. My cock throbs, aching to harden, to be stroked, to be fucked, and to fuck. I force my gaze to the highway. Gripping the leather steering wheel in an iron-tight vise, his hot gaze shifts from the road where paparazzi trail after my Audi, to me, over and over. Road, then me. Road, then me. I'm watched and observed all the time, by strangers, by cameramen, by people, and never, never have I come undone. Until now. Until his eyes feel like hands, and I want them all over me. "Brake," he says deeply. I slow the car at the last second, hitting bumper-to-bumper traffic. Now the car is unbearably still. I feel like my Audi has shrunk into a compact. Too small. The middle console barely divides his body from mine, and my body from his. Do I even want a divide anymore? No. And yes, he's my bodyguard. That's not changing. It's not. But I can't even think about anyone else. He hasn't just pitched a tent in my brain and dick. He's built a fucking stone castle that no wolf can ever blow down. What am I supposed to say to him? My cock only wants you. My brain only wants you. I didn't pick up that girl because I only want you. Or, if I fucked someone else tonight, it would have made me sick. None of that extinguishes this one cold fact. It's ethically wrong to be with my bodyguard. "Maximov," Pharaoh says, my name slicing the dense air like dropping a guillotine. I steal a quick glance at him. He rubs his bottom, pierced lip with his thumb, and his brows rise. "Ready to talk about this?" "This," I say, imagining my hands ripping his shirt off his head. Muscle against muscle, lips against lips. I blink. "This traffic is fucking terrible." "This is in you and me." He pauses. "Us." Headlights glare in my rear view. My stringent posture contracts my shoulders, my deltoids, my whole body, and I switch lanes fast. Windows of a nearby SUV roll down, a cannon pointing at my car. Great. I drive 30 over just to desert the SUV. Pharaoh keeps an eye on neighboring vehicles while he says, "I know talking about this isn't easy. In any other situation, I'd just kiss you." "Fuck." I lick my lips again, muscles flexing. I harden beneath my jeans and boxer briefs. "You sure I wouldn't be the one to kiss you?" I counter. I can feel his lips lifting. For how close we are, the space between us couldn't feel farther away. Whoever makes the first move will have to cross miles, scale mountains, ferry oceans to reach the other side. I glance at him, and his amused smile stretches wider. "In your dreams, maybe you'd kiss me first." Talk of my dreams reminds me of how long I've crushed on him. Since I was 16. I start to padlock my emotion with 1,000 iron keys. His smile slowly falls. "Did I say something wrong?" "No," I say instinctively, and then, "I don't know." "Beware. He's your bodyguard," scrolls across my vision like a ticker tape warning. For Christ's sake, we can't even kiss without having a conversation beforehand. It's all so elementary. Kissing. I want to do more. I want more. In a way that I've never even had before. And is that what's being offered? Is it even possible?
What are you thinking? He asks. Because I don't know where you stand. You have so many boundaries, you're practically a walking, talking, don't enter sign.
Like you don't have any? I combat.
He laughs into a grin. I consider some boundaries like cautionary tales. Proceed with caution, but you know, still go on ahead.
He flashes me the hottest smile I've ever seen, and I bear on my molars, my erection wanting pressure, a mouth, a hand, an ass. His mouth, his hand, his ass.
I find myself shaking my head.
What? He asks. I have to tell him my biggest roadblock, as though it's not in his face obvious enough. I value self-awareness. I take a colossal breath, the ability to understand and perceive every facet of my own weird existence. In Greek ethics, it's said only the self-aware understand what is right, and therefore will have the knowledge to do what is good. I want to do what is right, to do good, to be good. Pharaoh taps the middle console, his thumb ring clicking against leather. His hand is an inch from my arm. He nods, understanding.
And you see, being with your bodyguard is wrong, and wrong leads to bad. And bad equals unhappy in your philosophically bound head. You realize that not everyone thinks that way, Maximoff?
My brows knot. In what universe does wrong lead to rays of fucking sunshine and happily ever afters, Pharaoh? Please, enlighten me.
How about rewinding and asking yourself, is it really wrong? Or how about this one? What is ethical to begin with? Who decided on these moral rights?
He leans back, boot on his seat.
Or what about what Thoreau said?
I frown.
You've read Thoreau? I took philosophy and lit during undergrad.
I give him a brief look like he's flown off the planet. That was over 7 years ago, and I doubt he reads in his spare time. While my shelves are stacked and stacked with comics, graphic novels, and philosophy texts, his one small bedroom bookshelf is bare.
I remember everything I skim, he says,
not even lying about skimming texts. One right turn and I drive onto our street. We go silent. I pass rows and rows of townhouses, both of our homes in view. Then I pull onto the short driveway. He clicks the garage button, and I park next to Jane's baby blue Beetle. After shutting off the ignition, the garage door grinds closed. We stay right here, inside my three-car garage, sheltered from the Philly noise. Quiet. Alone. In one single breath, Pharaoh turns towards me. His arm extends over the back of my leather seat. My muscles burn and tighten like rubber bands that beg to snap. I want him even closer. But I hold still, marbleized. His other arm rests on the middle console, his hand one move away from my leg. Pharaoh caresses my gaze as he says,
Thoreau said, do not be too moral. You may cheat yourself out of much life, so aim above morality. Be not simply good. Be good for something.
His deep voice and Thoreau's words pour through me like liquid honesty. Be not simply good. Self-perfection has its limits. Being moral, making moral choices, it all means nothing in comparison to doing good for others. I don't need to be the perfect picture of morality in order to help someone in need. I'd rather be good for something, for someone. So I look at him. I'm talking a real look, like I'm excavating his every thought and desire. My eyes bore into his eyes, and then my gaze melts into a carnal wave against his gaze. Pharaoh returns the aroused, taut sentiment. Our short breaths are the only true noise. The headiest exchange of my life. Undeniable. He leans forward, his lips an inch from mine, and very deeply, very huskily, he whispers,
What do you want, Maximoff?
In an instant, I close the distance. My lips meet his lips, and the tension explodes. We thrust forward together,
An invisible divide detonates, blown to pieces. He deepens the strong kiss, our tongues wrestling, breath caught in my lungs. I clutch the back of his head with firm, possessive passion, wanting more of him. His muscular arm falls to my broad swimmer's shoulders. His fingers skim lightly, teasingly against my burning neck, rising through my thick hair. Fucking Christ. A low groan sticks in my throat while we kiss. His smile grows against my stinging lips. I want closer, but the middle console is in our fucking way. I untuck the black shirt from his pants. My hand slips beneath, discovering the warm ridges of his abs that flex against my large palm. My other hand shifts to his jaw, his skin rough from a less than close shave. His masculinity pumps blood into my dick, turning me on inside out. I like men that can bench press as much, if not more, than me. The kind that tries to steer my ship in bed and then relents, ultimately. The kind that kisses like a fiend, but becomes a pleasured puddle while we're fucking. Pharaoh pulls me nearer to his 6'3" build, finding extra room to move. He breaks the kiss, only for his mouth to travel down my sharp jaw, to my neck. Fuck me. I twist his shirt in my fist, and then I climb between the seats. Heading into the back, I pull Pharaoh in this direction behind me. He follows. Our asses hit the stretched leather seat. No physical objects in our way. We breathe heavily, sprinting towards something we've never chased. I yank the shirt over his head, and he tugs off mine. Hot skin against hot skin, tattooed chest to bare chest, I pin him to the side door, his head gently touches the window. He grins, panting for two breaths. So, it's like that then, his fingers hook in my waistband. I need his hands on my cock. I grind forward, shifting his hand lower. His brown eyes pool with intrigue and arousal. It's like what? I ask deeply. One corner of his mouth curves. You're bossy every place, everywhere. It's like that. And then Pharaoh uses his strength and hooks his arms beneath mine. Swiftly he turns me, my spine meeting the interior car door. Our position's reversed. The back of my head meets the window. And his knee presses on the leather between my legs. Closer, he clasps my hand. He sucks my ear before whispering, "So am I." Fuck, I pant, oxygen barely leaving my lips. I'm fucking breathless. Lightning has been striking me on repeat. I've never felt breathless in my life. I've never been with anyone I've known. Not like this. Never have I had real feelings beyond physical attraction. Not until him. Merging the two, the feelings with the physical, it catapults me to a new plane of existence. Pharaoh lets go of my hand to clutch my jaw, his fingers on my face. My neck arches back against the window, my eyes almost rolling, but they fasten into a daggered look. Fuck. I need him lower. When I train my piercing gaze on him, I see how he drinks in my pleasure. Getting off by my expression, he kisses outside of my lips, and I kiss him more fully, tongues tangled. He grabs my neck, our pelvises digging closer, erections bound beneath fabric but fucking dying to meet. I fist his hair, tugging, sitting up more to be at equal height. The handlebar protrudes into my back, but I wrench Pharaoh harder to my chest. His lips part into a gruff groan. I can't wait anymore. I draw his hand lower, to my zipper. Unzip me, man. I want jeans off, boxer briefs off. Pharaoh palms my cock, then squeezes above the fabric with the perfect pressure. Fuck me. Swiftly, he fishes my button through, unzips, and on instinct, I lift his head back up, to kiss me again. Pharaoh seizes my jaw in a strong but affectionate grip, ensuring that I stay still. So, he likes control. Not a new fact, but I wonder if he'd let go just in bed. And then I wonder if he's thinking the same thing about me. The second our lips break, I put a firm hand on his chest, and I guide his back to the bottom of the leather seat until he lies supine. His ravenous gaze swallows me whole. I expect him to protest about the new position, but he clutches my shoulder and pulls me down on top. Our movements quicken feverishly, our legs intertwining, our dicks grind before I stroke the outline of his length rock hard. Fuck. Me. I unbutton his black pants. He yanks my jeans halfway down my thighs, revealing my green boxer briefs. We exchange hard, rough kisses in every free second. His lip piercing no longer cold but warm against my mouth. I unzip him. We stop. We suddenly freeze as my phone vibrates in my pocket. Loudly. Incessantly. Someone's calling me. Our chests visibly rise and fall. His lips reddened from my force, and before I tell him I have to answer, he's already digging into my jeans pocket, retrieving my phone. He remembers that calls are more important than texts. I never ignore calls. I can't. Not if family may be in trouble. I just realize his earpiece is out, and also his radio. He left both on the passenger seat up front. Checking the caller ID, Pharaoh says, "It's your dad." 15. Maximov Hale. My dad is calling me. Great. I sit up off Pharaoh, and he sits up with me. Turns towards one another still, our arms are on the back of the same seat. I steady my breath, used to the worst timing for most things. Pharaoh presses the green accept call button and hands me the phone, basically saying, "I'm okay with you talking to your dad, Wolf Scout. Do what you need to do." "Hey, Dad," I say, putting the call on speaker for Pharaoh. Almost subconsciously, throughout the years, but also while he's been my bodyguard, he earned my trust, and now I can reciprocate. In my life, that's monumental. Pharaoh combs a casual hand through the just-tugged strands of his white hair. His lips quirk when he catches me staring longer. I made out with my bodyguard. Officially. I'm in the no-take-backs fly zone. While I hover here, I just want to do so much fucking more. My brain is zeroed in on him, and as far as I can tell, he's just as honed in on me.
"Hey, Muffy."
My dad's naturally sharp-edged voice fills the car, but he can't see anything. Thank God.
"I'm the bearer of shitty news tonight."
My brows knot. "How shitty?"
"Hold on."
He must pull the phone away, his voice harder to hear.
"What are you doing awake? No, never mind. Bed. Now."
"Dad."
I know that voice and her serious tone, like he's unconscionably destroying her favorite pair of boots and gothic makeup. It's my little sister, Kenny.
"You don't understand. The witching hour is at 3 a.m. I need to commune with my people."
"Wait, are you dead? Did I forget to print an obituary of my own 13-year-old daughter? Let me think about this."
My dad's dry voice definitively says I'm not thinking about this. His thick sarcasm makes Pharaoh's lips upturn even more towards me, knowing exactly where mine originates.
"Dad,"
she huffs.
"Kenny Hale,"
he refutes.
"I banished ghosts from this house millenniums ago. They're all afraid of me. You're wasting your time, so bed now. You have school tomorrow."
He must have put the phone to his ear. To me, he sighs. "Kids. Just to piss her off."
"I'm not a kid, you troll."
I can actually hear her stomping away. My dad laughs.
"I love you, little Slytherin,"
he shouts after her. And to me, he asks,
"Sorry, where was I?"
"Shitty news," I say, hesitant to pull off my jeans in case I need to go home for whatever reason. Pharaoh stays as motionless as me.
"Are you in your car?"
"Yeah, you're on speaker, by the way."
"Pharaoh, is he speeding? If he is, you have my full permission to ground him. Take away his phone. He hates that."
Pharaoh is smiling like a Cheshire cat, loving this too much. I glare and flip him off. He clasps my hand.
"He's only 5 over, he says, easily, still smiling.
I bring our hands down, examining his tattooed fingers that spell K-N-O-T. The other hand reads T-A-M-E in black ink. Pharaoh watches me fixatedly, but adds to my dad,
"Let's blame traffic."
It's more than a good lie. It's one that's meant to help me, first and foremost. Not my parents. Not the security team. Me. He's on my side.
"Steal his keys next time," my dad says.
I glance at the phone. "How about you not order my bodyguard around? That's my job." Pharaoh grins and mouths to me, "You wish." I almost groan. I just want to fuck him. Before my dad talks about my mom worrying about me behind the wheel, I say,
"I can't talk long. What's the shit news?"
"We're gonna have to reschedule our lunch tomorrow. Your Uncle Connor and Uncle Reich have parent-teacher meetings."
I read the texts earlier this morning, and the pictures have been going viral since noon. My little cousins Winona Meadows and Ben Cobalt spray-painted Dalton Academy Science Lab with the words "frog killers." Those two always send me memorandums on environmental objectives that HMC Philanthropies should complete. They're 13 and 15, and they get in trouble together monthly. "Let me know the new day for lunch. I'll be there," I tell them. I look forward to lunches with my dad and my uncles, but if one of us can't make it, we just reschedule to a day later in the week. It's shitty, but it's not the worst.
"Drive safe, Muffy,"
my dad says, his tone serious. "I will. Night."
"Love you, bud."
He hangs up. I pocket my phone and stare off, thinking. My dad's voice lingers in my ears. Being with my bodyguard, there are consequences packed on top of consequences. If I can, I want to avoid all of them. I train my gaze on Pharaoh. He rests his knuckles to his lips, brows raised at me.
"Listening to Socrates and Plato again?"
I force an irritated smile. "No." I lift my jeans to my waist, but I don't button or zip yet. Pharaoh eyes my movements. "What's wrong?" I stay near him, not adding distance or space. "What happens between us? It has to stay secret, all of it. If you want to do anything with me, you can't treat this rule like it's flexible or meant to be broken." Pharaoh smiles.
"I agree."
"We agree?" I say, disbelieving. What alternate universe am I in?
"I love my job."
He holds my gaze.
"And if the security team or your family finds out that I crossed a line and broke their trust, I'm gone. Someone will replace me as your bodyguard. Which means that the new bodyguard will spend more time with you than I do. And that's just not happening."
His voice falls to a husky whisper.
"You need to know that I only do exclusive. No fucking around. You want me, you only get me. And vice versa."
Exclusive. A relationship. A secret relationship. I've never had any of those. I wish I could be happy that he only wants me. I wish that I could accept the truth that I only want him. But I'm concerned about the little annoying details that slip between these facts. I look straight at him. "You have no idea what you're getting yourself into. You can't know." He never breaks eye contact.
"Then tell me, Maximoff."
I don't falter. "I genuinely love sex." I say the truth I've always hidden. I have a really high fucking sex drive. It sounds so simple. It's not. I've never spoken publicly about how much sex I have. Sharing those details, it's a heavy responsibility that I carry very prudently. For one, my mom is a sex addict. He knows. I'm used to this fact, too, but the depth that I still need to go pins my tongue down. I pause. I turn slightly and crack my knuckles. People usually ask, "Isn't it so awkward that you know your mom's sexual history?" I can handle the awkward. I can handle everything. Even the cruelty towards her. But it'll always boil my blood. If you're going to attack someone, come at me. Pharaoh shifts his arm that's on the back of the seat, so his forearm lies on top of my forearm, almost comfortingly. I stare at the way his fingers clutch my elbow, and then I look up at him. There's not enough information or research.